WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Tuna noodle casserole, Jell-O salad, American chop suey, beef stroganoff, peanut butter cookies, and whipped cream cake are some of the dishes that have made it into a new collection of the most popular recipes of 20th century American cuisine. The book is called The American Century Cookbook. My guest is the author Jean Anderson. She's the author of more than 20 cookbooks. She started her career testing recipes for the Ladies' Home Journal. She says she wrote this new book to track the recipes, foods, food trends, food people, appliances, and gadgets that have had an impact on 20th century American life.
Well, we're approaching the year 2000. And first of all, I think more happened in the 20th century in the way of cooking and food than in all the other centuries put together. I mean, look at the woman of 1900. She was cooking on a wood stove. She was using primarily fresh foods or foods that she had put down herself. But look at everything that's happened. I mean, all the electric gadgets, electric refrigerators, ranges, frozen foods, freeze-dried foods, on and on and on. It's astonishing. I mean, food processors, microwave ovens. I'd love to drop Fanny Farmer into a supermarket today or into a, you know, a modern kitchen today and see what her reaction would be. I think that she would probably faint dead away at the changes that she would see.
You point out, too, that it's in the 20th century that American cuisine becomes an international cuisine as more and more immigrants come here and the rest of the culture picks up on their foods.
Absolutely, and I think not only the immigrants coming in, but the fact that we are traveling far and wide. I think the advent of jet travel really is what put the world within reach. And certainly those of us who've traveled in Europe, in Asia, in Africa, South America, wherever, we ate those dishes, we loved them, we came home, and we tried to duplicate them. That, of course, plus the influx of immigrants most recently from the Asian countries. I mean, just witness what's happened with Thai cooking. That is now the really hot number.
Now, in the early 60s, when you were testing recipes for Ladies' Home Journal, what were the popular foods of the time? What were some of the recipes that you were doing?
Casseroles. Prepared foods were enormously popular. Of course, many of the recipes were advertiser-driven or product-driven. We didn't admit to that, and of course, we would never use a brand name in a recipe, but we did use what were known as generics. Hot liquid red pepper seasoning, for example, instead of Tabasco sauce. All of these products had generic names that were known to the readers, and this is what we would do. But many, many of the recipes certainly were product-driven, and I do remember representatives of food companies coming through our kitchens to introduce a new product and give us sample recipes that they had developed. We would always take their recipes or their products and develop our own.
Give me an example of a casserole that was product-driven.
Well, Campbell Soup Tuna Noodle Casserole is the great classic. The classic green bean bake is another one. These were using the cream of mushroom soup. And these came out, I believe, in the 30s, as indeed did the cream of mushroom soup. And that was the perfect binder. You no longer had to make a white sauce to bind all of these ingredients together. Just open a can, stir everything up, top it with crumbs or cracker, bread or cracker crumbs, and shove it in the oven. That's all you had to do.
So did the Campbell's Soup people come up with the idea of tuna noodle casserole?
I think they did, absolutely. Yes, I'm sure that's one of their recipes. In fact, they have subsequently done collections of pamphlets of their classic favorite recipes, and that indeed is one of them, along with the green bean bake.
Another interesting thing you point out in your book about tuna noodle casserole is that before the 20th century, you couldn't get fresh tuna in the United States. When did canned tuna come into
that? Was 1903 that tuna was first put into cans, and I would say one thing. I think probably people living in the New York area or perhaps California, San Francisco, or Los Angeles probably could, in very good fish markets, find fresh tuna, but certainly mass America could not. And once tuna was put into cans, we not only had tuna salad and sandwich spreads, but then, as I said, in the 30s, Campbell Soup came up with this wonderful tuna noodle casserole, which to this day remains a great favorite.
Your book is filled with a lot of history about what foods or recipes come into being in certain years. 1934 struck me as an interesting year. It's the year MSG is manufactured. Ritz crackers are created. Campbell's adds chicken noodle and cream of mushroom soup to its repertoire. It sounds like an interesting year.
And it was also Depression.
Yeah, well, what impact did the Depression have on American food?
Well, I think certainly we learned how to stretch meat or to do without altogether. I think it was the rise of the casserole, because what better way to use up odds and ends that were in the refrigerator? I think people were using more macaroni and cheese. They were doing more meatloaves. I think they were just learning really and truly to be frugal and to use up everything, that every scrap of food that they had. And the Ritz cracker story, I think, is a very interesting one, because they came up with this very rich, very buttery cracker in the depths of the Depression, and it was so rich. The only name that they could give it was Ritz, and it took off. It just was an immediate bestseller. I think in those days it was about 19 cents a box or something. But it just took off. It was an immediate bestseller. And they even came up with this mock apple pie, which substitutes Ritz crackers for real apples, which to this day, it's still, the Nabisco people tell me, is still one of their most requested recipes.
Hmm.
And it does taste like apple pie, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah.
So Ritz crackers were, crackers, I guess, were a cheap food to eat.
Well, at 17 or 19 cents a box in those days, yes, I think that probably would be considered pretty cheap. And I think they were probably enormously satisfying because they were so rich.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jean Anderson. She's the author of many cookbooks, and her latest takes a look at the recipes of the 20th century. It's called American Century Cookbook, the most popular recipes of the 20th century. And there's a lot of food history in the book, and some food nostalgia as well. Jean, let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more.
Okay.
This is Fresh Air. Back with cookbook author Jean Anderson. Her new book is called The American Century Cookbook, The Most Popular Recipes of the 20th Century. When I was growing up, I think the balance of, like, meat and vegetables was really different than it is now. Like, if you were having, like, a meat dinner, then the ideal, I think, was a big piece of meat and, like, a little bit of vegetables. Whereas now, I think you're more likely to get a small piece of meat or a small piece of fish and a more generous portion of vegetables and potatoes. Do you think that's right?
Absolutely right, yes. And I certainly think the vegetarian movement of the 60s and 70s had a lot to do with it. And, in fact, now the health people are telling us that our portions of meat should really be no more than 3 ounces per serving. In the old days, it was 4 or 5, and of course, there were the days we would go out to a steakhouse and have a steak that weighed a pound. But definitely, yes, we are eating, and we're using, I think, meat really as a seasoner almost in many of our recipes rather than as the main ingredient. Soups, for example, or certain kinds of stews, I think that meats are really almost just there as a flavoring.
You say that the 20th century could be called the century of the salad. What were salads like before the 20th century?
I think they were basically repositories for leftovers. I think that they were, I mean, there would be meat salads or cooked vegetable salads that basically would just be dressed with oil and vinegar. But and we did have tomato aspic, because we did have gelatin. These would be great sheets of gelatin that you would have to soak for hours before you could use the gelatin. The granulated gelatin, the plain gelatin, came in the 1890s. And then Jell-O, the flavored gelatins, were, I think it was about 1898 or, pardon me, 99. And the man who invented or developed this was so discouraged that he tried to sell out for $35 in about 1899. And look what's happened. He did hang on, and by 1906, he was grossing more than $1 million a year on his flavored gelatins. It's an amazing story, but I think the rise of gelatin certainly had an enormous effect on salads. And in fact, Perfection Salad, which was a contest winner in 1905, kicked off this whole movement of the molded salad. If you look in the community cookbooks in the salad chapters. They're virtually all congealed or molded salads.
When does fresh salad, just a basic fresh salad, lots of lettuce, tomato, cucumbers, start becoming popular?
I think it really probably was certainly after World War II, and I would say probably even in the 60s. There were salads before that that were popular, Green Goddess salad, which dates to the 20s, Caesar salad, which dates to the 20s, Cobb salad, which dates to the 30s. These were all green salads. But I think the real movement began probably with the counterculture because they were growing different varieties of lettuce. For the first time, you could get things other than iceberg. You could get romaine. You could get some of the bitter greens. And then, of course, we began to get radicchio, and we got treviso and mizuna and all of these boutique lettuces. And I think it really started in the 60s and then just mushroomed.
You have a little history of the Caesar salad, and I was shocked to find that it originates in Mexico. I know I've been at Italian restaurants where they tell me about how Caesar salads are authentically made in Italy.
Well, they may be authentically made in Italy, but they didn't come from Italy. This is a salad that dates to the 1920s during Prohibition, and the Hollywood crowd would go south of the border to Tijuana to party because they could drink. And there was a restaurant in Tijuana called Caesar's. It was owned by a man called Caesar Cardini. And one 4th of July weekend, a group came down from Hollywood, and he really didn't have anything to serve. And so he went into the cooler and looked at what he had, and he had some romaine lettuce and I think some eggs and oil and vinegar and some Parmesan cheese, and he decided give the show people a show and they'll love it. So he came out, and with great ceremony, he tossed this salad together, and he told them that they should eat it with their hands. And I remember Julia Child saying that when she was young, she went down to Caesar's in Tijuana and ate the real Caesar salad with her hands. But the Hollywood contingent after that weekend came back to Hollywood raving about this green salad. And then, of course, the restaurants in Hollywood found out what the recipe was and began serving it. I think most people think it's a California salad. And in a way, I guess it is, because Tijuana is just across the border. And it was the California contingent that discovered it and brought it back to California.
Well, what would you say are in the top five most popular recipes of the 20th century?
Well, I think certainly Caesar salad. I would say that the German chocolate cake, or chocolate chip cookies, probably Vichy Soise, which is not French. That's an American invention. Let's see here. Hamburgers all the way and hot dogs all the way, certainly. Pizza, certainly. I mean, that is an Italian recipe, but it's one that we've made our own. I think people from Naples would not recognize the pizzas that we produce in this country. But those certainly come to mind immediately as standouts.
Well, Gene Anderson, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Gene Anderson is the author of the American Century Cookbook, The Most Popular Recipes of the 20th Century. I'm Terry Gross.